Well, here we are, folks, once again. We're back with Valley Edition, and this is the first Friday in 2013. And do we have a lot to talk about? A lot in terms of dollars, because dominating the recent news has been some multi-million dollar project events, situations involving the city of Palmer. And the first one, maybe we can kick off with, is the recent development around the acquisition of what is referred to as the Matt-Made Block in beautiful downtown Palmer. Terry, want to do a little history on this?
Well, it appears that voters went to the polls in about 2010 and gave the city the okay nod to buy up or purchase $3 million worth of bonds to purchase this historic block in downtown Palmer. Holds the water tower that's sort of the whole, you know, signature piece of Palmer. Seven individual owners gave the city the okay to start negotiations, and it's been a long, rocky road, and seems like it's coming sort of to a head at next Tuesday's council meeting. They are being laid out 171 pages worth of report from the manager where they are on that purchase.
Yes, and we want to direct listeners to the City of Palmer's website, where they've kindly placed the packet that the City Council will be using as they do the discussion on Tuesday at 7 p.m. as they start their meeting. And in it are all of these background materials, as well as the summary six-page kind of this is what we think should be done, at least in terms of the administration's recommendations. We have, in addition to the citizen lobbyist here in the studio today, Andrew Wellner from the Frontiersman. Welcome, Andrew.
Thank you very much.
And you've covered this over time yourself. Any observations in terms of where you think this might be going?
I kind of see it as sort of a change in the administration there. I think that it was a priority for the previous administration, and then he was shown the door, and the new one didn't see it as the same sort of priority. So I don't think that it's going to go forward as it was envisioned initially. But then I think that it was kind of optimistically envisioned, I guess would be the way of putting it. Maybe a good idea, but the realities on the ground weren't quite as predisposed to this sort of activity. And it was kind of an odd little story there, because, you know, I was in there on the ground floor, and then it was sort of the main election story that year, because the bonds flipped. It was this weird sort of result where we all went to bed thinking they'd failed, woke up, and lo and behold, they had passed.
Wow.
And so it wasn't particularly popular to begin with. It sort of split the city 50-50, I would say.
Okay.
And then I just kind of lost the thread. I think a lot of people did, until one day I just was like, whoa, what's happening with that? And I called the city manager, and that's when we sort of – when I at least got sort of the first read on, hey, this isn't going like we thought it would. There's all these problems with sellers not wanting to sell or wanting more for their property than the city's willing to pay. So, I think that's kind of where it's at. It's probably going to move forward, but in sort of a reduced capacity. They're probably not going to end up with the whole block.
Mm-hmm. And in the detail that you'll find, if you go to the website, you can see nicely laid out the both the pros and cons on each of these. And as a summary, what happened was that there are four suggestions that are made as to what may be a decision by the council. And, of course, they could do something entirely different. But the two of them that are most interesting, I think, are the number three, which is to go ahead and purchase what you can purchase. And at this time, there apparently have been some negotiated agreements. They're awaiting completion with a number of the landowners. And in addition to that, there is choice number four. And behind that door is a kind of nothing. You open that door, walk through it, and keep on walking, because the suggestion is it is always possible to just walk away and not take any action to acquire this property. And in the long-term history, this has been a thing that's been around for many, many, many years. A lot of people have tried to do something with this, and it's been pushed a little bit more once the bottling plant there in the Creamery area shut down. And there seemed to be an optimism that something could be done to negotiate with the state, because 35% of that block is in that property, which is under the control of one arm of the state. And at this time, apparently, as summarized in the paperwork there, the state is saying it's worth just under $1 million, and that's our price. And apparently there's not much interest in doing any land swaps or anything else. And so, but that's 35% of the block. And there are at least three other landowners who have, again, according to the materials they have before us, in concept agreed to taking some money and with an option to buy at certain prices. But the bottom line would be that since this has moved along kind of slowly, and perhaps because of the due diligence required and all the work that's been done, times have passed when perhaps the real estate values were lower. And that's where we are. So, Terry, you want to throw in anything else about this?
Well, I think you've covered it pretty well. I think we also are sitting on a time where elected officials, particularly in the Valley, are really moving at a very conservative level, that particularly I've seen with the council, they put a lot of angst through on their budget and not wanting to raise any property taxes within the borough or the city, trying to live within those same amounts when you have so many deferred needs and you also have expanding needs because of population. At some point, you have to face that reality that you have to have more income. So I'm not so sure that there just isn't the majority of the members that are sitting there that have no appetite for big projects with, as Andrew pointed out, maybe the last administration did. It's a completely different vibe from who's sitting there now. And, that's who's driving the car. And at the end of the day, they'll make a decision based on a lot of those personal ideologies.
Okay. And now, let's just throw in something here, because that's an interesting question. There have been some changes. There's a new mayor. There's a new city manager. But at least four of the members of the city council were there before 2010. Same people, perhaps in a different place in their mind, but there's history. There are people with history who've seen this thing through for a long time.
Right. But, I think that even people that were sometimes considered moderate have swung sometimes in these climates, or what's been at least told them is this climate, a little more conservative. So I would say probably, it's been ratcheted back a few knots. They're not quite as optimistic. And, really, when you have a manager who's optimistic and moving forward and full of excitement and possibilities, that sort of moves everybody else that way too. But when you have somebody who has a completely different personality, and I would say this manager is about a 360 from what they had prior, they're going to listen to – that's what they've, hired that guy to do. So they've certainly taken on that tone.
Right. And it's instructive, I think, to look down at the bottom line and the recommendation from the administration, which is to go with what's behind door number three, which is to acquire those properties you can acquire and not pull back completely and work from there. So we'll see, because Tuesday night the council will take this up, and they will be doing that with their mind filled with an even larger number, one that begins with a four and has six zeros after it, the $4 million question, reaching way back to about the same time or slightly before when the thinking was moving on this property acquisition. there was the in-your-face, literally, situation where a geyser erupted in downtown Palmer, and it required immediate action, and immediate action was taken. The entire Alaska Street running through town and beyond was dug up. The big dig happened, and there were a few months that went on where things were disrupted, and then the new road was there, and it was all done. But as the dust settled, apparently, there were some questions raised regarding the, as I understand it here, a couple of things. And I see I see Andrew smiling because he covered all this. And what do you have to say?
Well, it the question of the lawsuit that was eventually filed was, is it okay to do that in-house? Is it okay to do that with your own in-house public works? And the contention raised in the lawsuit is that no, it was not, that the grants that they were using to pay for this work specified that you needed to put it out to bid, you needed to get an outside contractor to, and they were stimulus funds, so the idea was that you would then create jobs as opposed to just paying for a job that's already there. It's hard to write stories at this stage in a lawsuit because all you've got is the one side. I've got it tagged in my calendar when their deadline is to file a response because I want to be there right when that comes out to put that piece out there. And before something is officially filed, smart lawyers won't talk to a reporter. So I didn't expect I would get that other side of it. But to read that complaint, there is an issue here. Should they have put these out to bid and just sort of I don't know what the city would have done. Those were scary times. I mean, merchants downtown still talk about that. And very soon after, Palmer lost a bunch of downtown merchants. Whether the city was in the right or not, I mean, I think there's a question out there of what else would they have done. Mm-hmm.
Right. Terry, do you have any?
Well, I went to the government website today. There's a list that they put together of everybody in our area that really receives stimulus funds. And it's really a mixed bag of government and some private business there, depending on what the scope of their work was. And, you know, I guess I would hope that if we're going to hold the city to that standard, all the other cities in the borough and everybody else should be held to that standard too, as if it was to generate more employment, then, you know, the people, we often forget that our city workers, you know, they've spent a lot of money within our own communities and they stimulate our economy. I think it's real easy to be, you know, down on public workers, and I'm not saying that's, you know, the course that this has taken, but, you know, I think it's always good to remember that that's the most solid portion of our communities are the people that run our governments. Normally that, you know, those are dollars that can be counted on and get recycled back into the community. So, you know, there is a long list of people that benefited from the stimulus, and Palmer was just one of them, but right now, you know, they're in the spotlight.
Sure. And I would suspect if we go back to the archives and look at what was written at that time, I would guess, because I think there was a lot of open discussion. The discussion about how to do it, what to do it, given the emergency circumstances, and the issue of whether the public works workforce could do it, whether there was time enough, whether Davis-Bacon wages could or could not be paid. That was all discussed in an open session at the city council, and it was reported on at the time. So that information was out there. It wasn't, at least it doesn't appear at this point, that it was something that was done behind closed doors. There were certainly questions asked at that time, and maybe this is one of those gray areas, one of those places where there wasn't a definitive answer and a decision was made to go ahead and to do what appeared to be necessary to solve that emergency, and life went on. There are those three choices. On the one hand, it was right. On the other hand, it was wrong. And then it was sort of okay, maybe in between. And a lot of life is lived in the in-between areas. So,
right, okay. And I think that was the time, I know when I first became aware of that ever, you know, vibrating shovel-ready project thing where I think we learned something from that time because the money was kind of dropped fast and shovel-ready became the big key word in being able to get money. And, you know, I think from what I've read, Palmer has been planning on replacing, you know, knew those issues were out there. There was a plan. They couldn't have done it as speedily as they were able to do it without some type of plan to go. But I think once the water started flowing, as Andrew has well pointed out, you know, the businesses, the community was affected so quickly, and by all accounts, what I've read and responded in a really, you know, good manner that everybody was pretty happy with. It's easy to look in the rearview mirror now, but I'm not sure that we'll see.
Okay, and that will receive some attention, and Andrew has rightly pointed out, we still have to see responses from various lawyers and see how that goes. Well, let's turn to a third topic, which is, on the face of it, a large tens of millions of dollar project, but on a daily basis is this little trickle leak of only tens of thousands of dollars, and that's the ferry. We'll leave the city of Palmer here for a bit and cast our eyes toward the borough. What's happening there?
We were just talking before we went on the air. We haven't heard anything really recent. I mean, the last thing that I think I wrote about it was when the borough was talking to the Marianas Islands about maybe having them use it. And I thought that was a sort of a quirky little story. I mean, it was just like an element of the story was this weird election going on and this recall of a governor in this island territory. So it was funny and interesting to me. But the part that I thought was newsy was when the borough planner, who they've sort of appointed as their ferry point man, said, "We're not going to move this boat until summertime." I mean, we were looking at months of this being our boat until we can give it to somebody else.
Okay. Terry?
Well, and considering there's an oil rig stuck in a bunch of ice, that might have been a very good decision based on that right now. But I agree with Andrew. It's been a very quiet topic. It hasn't been brought up at any assembly meetings. I'm curious simply because there was such angst about paying the $60,000 or $80,000 a month and only 1 month at a time. But I think the optimism ran out with the weather and on moving it. And, you know, how that's, you know, being facilitated now and paid for, you know, without assembly approval, I'm not really sure, although they may have just given a blanket approval, just keep paying it and come to that consensus. And it's still a sizable amount of money. There's still talk, and I hear talk now of talking to the Department of Transportation again, trying to see if somehow they can use this vessel in Southeast. We all know that the governor made some changes to the ferries that were going to be built for island hopping down there. And, you know, maybe this is the time. The time has come for small ferries. So maybe there's a revisit of that. But we'll see if it comes up at the January 15th meeting. It would be nice if they would at least give an update, at least in a public venue, to what's going on, since it is a large amount of taxpayer money going out every month.
Right, and that has been variously described, but my sense was it's in the amount of how much?
$60,000 to $80,000 a month.
Yeah. Right, let's take the mid figure of $70,000, go for 5 months, that's $350,000. Let me think, what could that do?
Well, it's better than the $20 million they'd have to pay for the feds for. Yeah,
that's true.
You know, it's kind of one of those, we can do this, this, or this. But
okay, well, I suspect that if it's not on the agenda on that Tuesday, the 15th, what we will see happening is someone stepping up and asking the question, what's happening with that? Because I think that's an important deal. Mm-hmm. All right, so we have two other money issues here that I think are worth some a little bit of attention. The one, now we've taken care of the little things. Let's look at the big thing. Washington, D.C., okay? Washington, D.C., in a sleight of hand action taken after it was supposed to happen, but still legitimately, apparently, a decision was made in Congress to back away from the fiscal cliff. And that decision included a number of pieces, one of which really kicked still down the road, not only a can, but I like to view it as a can of worms. I mean, it's still, and people now reflecting are saying, we have that debt ceiling, and we have still the benefits issues that involve, in particular, M&M, Medicare and Medicaid. But what did happen was that people who are earning $400,000 as an individual or $450,000 as a couple are going to have to pay more taxes. A few other little pieces in there. So what do you think, or have you felt, let's put it this way, either one of you, the impact of that decision in Washington, D.C. so far?
My wife tends to not pay attention to the news except when it has implications for her financial planning. Uh-huh. I think the last time I remember her paying a whole lot of attention to the news was when Sarah Palin was thinking about sort of the energy rebate money that she gave out that one time. Yeah, okay. She followed that debate closer than I did, closer than probably anybody. So she was watching the fiscal cliff and she's not anymore because it's not going to affect my pocketbook. So that's nice to not have to worry about that. But I mean, there's still the larger national issues to worry about. I was just randomly clicked on a link on Don Young's Facebook page. He was looking for interns, and all the comments on his intern thing was, "Thanks for kicking the can down the road, Don. My kids are going to have to pay for this." Like, people are upset, and people are talking about it. It's not going away.
Okay.
I think we're going to be talking about fiscal cliffs for months and months.
Right.
Yeah, I got that same response. I saw those, too, and I think he's getting a certain amount of that. I think he voted no for the flood monies, too.
Oh, did he? Really?
And I think people are a little upset about that. But, it's interesting. What I want to say is, what's my reaction? Kind of more of the same. I reflect back to last year when a new Senate came in, and there was a lot more hoopla about the new members and a lot more picture-taking and a lot more camaraderie. And they were basically passing each other in the hall. The new members were coming in as the old members were leaving. We've got some, big powers leaving. DeMint, several conservative members of Congress. The numbers are going to change a little bit. But the argument seemingly isn't.
Okay.
So that's unfortunate for the American people. And the only way to change that is next time they go in the voting booth.
You know what? I've seen a shift, too. We used to talk about a dysfunctional Senate and a broken Senate that needed fixing. But it seems like the House took the blame for this one. And I've seen even press releases from Begich saying, "Oh, the House needs to get on the ball. The Senate did our job. Where was the House?" So I've seen that shift. I don't know if it's something to track. I don't know if it's going to have any.
Well, I think there's more members in the House and there's more extremists in the House.
That's true.
And, there was some question whether the new Senate or the House president would be reelected. So I think there was, pedals down to the metal on several things and who is the adult in the room. And, I noticed today that it didn't stop Michelle Bachmann from introducing a bill to get rid of Obamacare. So, she's still in the House. She didn't exactly come in in a big margin, but she's back. So some of the regular players that made it their job to undermine everything that had been done, even by the sentiment of the American people, are still in place.
That's true.
Okay. So in the last few minutes we have here, of course, we saved the best for last. The legislature here in the state of Alaska in a very short time is going to reconvene, and there's changes there. Significant changes. We've talked about them before, and people have written extensively about it. Perhaps the what happens there in the decisions made in particular will have an effect on the Valley. Whether it's asking for money, additional monies, for example, by the city of Palmer to perhaps grease the acquisition of the property here, or any of the many projects that are they're awaiting funding. What do you think? What What's going to happen this session? Just quickly, is it people going to walk away smiling and say, okay, we finally have the power and we're going to make this happen? Not only will oil companies be given a tax break, but everybody else is going to get some money for their pet projects. Is that what's going to happen?
Well, it's only the first year of a two-year session, and by tradition, not a lot happens the first year of a two-year session. A lot of things get introduced, and they get acted on the next one. As far as oil companies, will their pillow get fluffed and a mint slipped under it? That's possible. It's hard to say. They certainly have the people. They got rid of the coalition that they wanted, and all by all accounts, they have most of the players in positions that they want now. You know, as we know, people think getting power is the hard part, but actually, it's keeping it. And we've been in this situation before, where only one party was ahead of both bodies. It was in 2006. That was during the veto time, and that was not a good reflection on Alaska. So I guess we'll see. But there are some powers of players in Matsu, and it certainly has gotten some attention from, the rest of the state.
Okay.
Well, I think that, it's time for them to sort of put their money where their mouth is. I mean, they said, if you give us the Senate, we will get this done. So now it's time to do it, right? And if they don't, then I think people are paying attention. I think the same people that put them there can take them out.
Okay.
With more than 17% of the vote, we would hope.
Hopefully, yes.
Well, we've covered a lot of money and a fair amount of ground, and we're looking forward to the next few months in the case of what's happening with the Alaska Senate and House and the governor as they work together in some way. Also, we're going to be seeing at least another go at a national consensus that will result in some legislation because that in particular, the debt ceiling is coming up in just about 2 months. And then, of course, we have maybe a more immediate decision on the question of whether Palmer is going to acquire the Met May property or not, and what happens to that $4 million lawsuit. So thank you again, Terry Snyder, citizen lobbyist, Andrew Wellner, all-around reporter for the Frontiersman, for being here with you. We'll see you next week.